Welcome to the Happiness Podcast. I'm Dr. Robert Puff. In our last episode, we started our four-part series on relationships. In that episode, we explored on how to be a good partner. In this episode, we're going to look at how to find a good partner. And it really boils down to two parts. The first part relates to an adage that we all know. It's birds of a feather flock together. This is the correct adage. We don't want opposite attracts. Opposites do attract at first, but in the long run, they don't do very well. So what we're looking for is someone like us as much as possible. But in order for this to work out well, so that we have a great relationship in the long run, we have to go back to the previous episode. And the previous episode was how to be a great partner. Because if we're not a great partner, we're going to attract someone who isn't going to reciprocate that. We need to first be a great partner, because if we are a great partner, loving, kind, supportive, listening, taking good care of ourselves, being healthy, being happy, then that's what we're going to attract. But if we are dysfunctional, struggling, having a hard time, then that's also what we're going to attract. So yes, it's super important to find someone like us, but we need to be like someone we want to find. And those are the two things you want to walk away with this episode. Find someone like ourselves, but also be the person that I would like to date. With those two in mind, we're going to do pretty well with finding a partner. But let's look at them more in-depthly. Well, the first thing we need to do is really to be that good partner. We need to be in a place that's healthy, that we're taking care of ourselves. Because if we don't do that, we're going to attract someone who also isn't healthy and isn't taking care of themselves. So this gets back to overall this whole podcast. It's about being happy, being healthy. If we're not that, we're going to attract that which we're not. And we all know people who have been in very dysfunctional relationships. We may have been in a few of them ourselves. Now, this isn't an absolute guarantee, but really the way to avoid that is by being that healthy person. Because if we are that healthy person, we're just not going to be attracted towards dysfunction. We may date it, but we won't date it very long. We'll end it quickly. And remember, this podcast is about relationships in general, not just dating. This could also apply to friendships, family. If we're healthy, we're just going to not put up with dysfunction. We're not, because it's going to be very unattractive to us. And when it does occur, we're just going to set up boundaries. The boundaries may vary from talking to them about it and setting up boundaries about their dysfunctional behavior so they don't continue to hurt us, to in some situations even ending it. And in dating, we will end it quickly because we're just not going to put up with dysfunctional behavior. Because even if the dysfunctional behavior isn't directed at us, in the long run, it probably is going to be. Let me explain. We all have a bubble around us, metaphorically. It's the way in which we treat ourselves. It's very clear. These are the rules that we follow. So, for example, if we're harsh on ourselves when we make mistakes, then we're going to be harsh on ourselves. But what happens in life, people periodically enter our bubble. We get married, and our spouse enters our bubble. We have children, and they enter our bubble. And when they enter our bubble, we start treating them as we treat ourselves. So let me use an example to illustrate this. Let's say there's a couple dating, and the man is very romantic. He gives his girlfriend flowers, writes her poetry, says a lot of endearing things to her, is very gentlemanlike, and then they get married, and it all changes. You probably met someone that's happened to. Well, what happens is, it isn't that he's loving her less. I'm not trying to pick on men right now, but it isn't that he's loving her less. It's more that he's treating her like he wants to be treated. He doesn't want flowers. He doesn't want poetry read to him, perhaps, so he doesn't give it to her anymore. He still cares for her, but he cares for her in the same way that he cares for himself. So when we're dating, we really have to watch how people treat other people, not necessarily how they treat us. How are they treating their friends, their family, and most importantly, how are they treating themselves? When they make a mistake, do they get angry at themselves? What is their self-talk like? And it may not be easy to pick up on that, but if we observe, if we take our time, it will unfold. We'll begin to see how they treat themselves, and we'll begin to see how they interact with the world. When someone cuts them off on the road, do they get really angry? Do they get upset? When they go through tragedy, how do they treat themselves? when we and them have an argument, how do they interact during that argument? And it isn't that it's hard to figure this out. It just takes time. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, and I've been in practice for 25 years. It's pretty easy for me to understand people and get a good feel for what they're like. But even for me, it takes time. And I've been doing it for a very long time. So let's give ourselves time. That's probably one of the most important things we can do. The longer we take to get to know the person before we decide to commit our lives to them, the better feel we'll have what we're going to look forward to. But again, it isn't so important how they treat us. I mean, of course that matters, but we're not going to marry them or get in a relationship with them if they're treating us poorly. What we have to look at is how are they treating themselves. If they're treating themselves in a harsh way, whatever they're doing towards themselves, sooner or later that's going to be directed at us. And we have to be honest, because so often what I see with people that we do is we expect that, well, if we're with them long enough, they're going to change. They may, but it is far better to assume that whatever we're getting, it's going to stay that way and maybe even get a little worse, but it's probably going to stay that way. So if they drink too many beers, if they yell at people too often, if they're stuck in their job and seem depressed, that's probably the way they're going to be the rest of their lives, no matter how much we love them. We can't change people very much. I make a living changing people because I can stay neutral, but when we're in a relationship with someone, we're probably not going to change them. Again, they may change, but we're probably not going to be the one to do that. And often people stay the same. So look at what you have and ask yourself, do I want to spend my life with this? Or am I, in quotes, hoping that they'll change by me loving them? Drop that. Say, can I live with what I have here? Because if we can't, then we probably shouldn't enter into bonds that are lasting. Friendships are fine, but if it's going to be marriage, if it's going to be a long-term relationship, we need to think about, this may not be the perfect person for me, if we want them to be different. If we can live with their differences, if we can live with their foibles and the things that they struggle with, great. But if we can't, we need to decide whether we need to stay in this relationship or not. One other common mistake that I see people do is that while they're looking for the right person, they hang on to this other person. Lots of people do this. I used to do a show called The Holistic Success Show, and I had the number one blogger in the world for relationships on my show. And he said the very same thing. He said that what people do, and mostly people reading his blogs were women, he said that what most women do is that they stay in old relationships that are going nowhere while they're hoping to find another one. What he encouraged, and I encourage us to do too, is end those relationships and be single so that we can actually find someone that we're looking for. We will sabotage new relationships because we're hanging on to old relationships. We need to let it go and work on being single. It's healthy to be single. It's good for us to be single, being able to be by ourselves and enjoy that solitude. When we're single, when we're able to do that, then we're not going to feel panicky and make bad choices. If we are panicky, then we need to work on that. And there are 47 other podcasts on this happiness podcast that we can listen to learn how to be happy with ourselves. We need to do that first before we find our partner. If we can't be alone, then we probably won't be a very good partner. Okay, part two is, how do we then find that great partner, those great friendships, those great relationships that last perhaps a lifetime? Now remember, the key here is to find someone as much like us as possible, because the more they're like us in every regard, not all of course, but as many ways as possible, we're going to do better. Opposites attract is not really true. They may attract, but in the long run, they don't do well. Birds of the feather flock together is the true adage. That's the one we pursue. So how do we find these birds of like feather? Okay, I suggest four ways. Number one is do what we do, do it passionately, and then when we're out doing it, look for people that are doing it too. I mean, personality types are attracted to certain types of activities. If you go to like a Star Trek convention or a Star Wars convention, it's going to attract certain types of people. If you go to a monastic retreat, it's going to attract other types of people. If we go to a Britney Spears concert, it's going to attract another type of people. If we go to the local bar, it's going to attract another type of people. So what we do is we say, okay, what do we do that we really enjoy, that we're passionate about? And then do that. But more than just doing that, look around and be friendly. People need encouragement, particularly nice people need encouragement to know that perhaps we are interested in them. And I'm not trying to be sexist here, but this is particularly true of women. Girls, women, if you're listening to this podcast, a nice guy is not going to come up to you and be aggressive. Yes, there are not nice guys out there, I know that. But a nice guy is going to first wait for you to give a little smile, a little hint that you're interested. You'll need to give him a little clue that you're interested, otherwise he'll respect that boundary and think that you're not. Being cold works with wolves, but if you want to attract someone who is kind, someone who is gentle, you need to give them some hint that you are interested. And by watching him, again, that's the beauty of taking our time. By watching the guy that we are looking for and seeing how they act, and then we can do this too. We will observe what they're like and then decide, is this the type of person I want to spend my time with and get to know better? If not, we walk away. If yes, then we give them a little hint and wait to see if they give us anything back and proceed from there. It's a gentle dance that we both have to participate in. And women, nice men need some encouragement. So let's make sure we're giving them some. And another great thing about this approach, where we're looking for people doing what we love, is that if there isn't anyone there, we're still going to have a good time and not get discouraged because we're doing what we love. And when we do meet someone, then we can go forward and see if it can blossom into something more, either a friendship or perhaps a life partner. Now, the second place where we can meet people is through our friends and people that we know. We have to let them know that we're interested because our friends are going to know us pretty well, family and friends both. And then they can kind of be out there looking for us. I know it can be a little scary going on blind dates, but it doesn't have to be a blind date. They can just have us over and have this other person there too and see if we're a good match. And because they know both of us, there's a potential there might be. So this is a really good way to find a mate, is through our friends and people that know us and have them sort of looking for us so that we can meet these people that could be potential mates that we could spend our life with. We have to put the word out there and not be too shy. But when we do that, our friends can really help us find our mate. I mean, that was the whole rule of matchmakers in the past. Matchmakers were there to help people find their mate. Let's use our friends as matchmakers and then see what we can find. They know us best and they'll be able to help us find potential mates. Now, the third way, which I know some listeners are not going to like, but it is the growing wave in our new world, is the internet. The internet has become a very effective way of finding mates. I want to talk a little bit about how to make it go effectively, and I'll begin with put out there as much information about ourselves as possible and look for someone who has as much information on them as possible. I mean, again, we're looking for someone like us. So if we just say, hey, I'm pretty, or hey, I'm handsome, and that's all we say, there's nothing there to know anything about us. We're going to go on a lot of frustrating dates if we do that. But if we look for profiles where people have a very detailed profile, and we too describe who we are and ask them, well, what did you like in our profile before we meet them? Then we can know that we're a good match. If they just say, well, you're pretty or we're handsome, that's not really a very good match. That's very surfacey. We're looking for that depth. We're looking for that likeness. And by putting our profiles as detailed as possible, I mean, keeping ourselves safe, but putting our likes, our dislikes, what we do, what we're looking for, what we're not looking for, and vice versa, looking what they have placed. And if nothing, then we need to ask some questions, lots of questions before we meet them. Again, I know the internet can go very fast, but it's going to go better if we take our time, if we get to know them. And then once we get to know them, making sure as we can that everything is truthful, because people can lie, of course. But the key factor here on internet dating is finding out as much information about them as possible and also sharing with them that, you know, I want children, I want to live here. I don't like this. I want to go to church. Whatever it may be, if we put it out there up front, then we're going to quickly go through those dates that don't work out. But if we don't put it up there, if we're secretive, if we have hidden secrets that we don't want them to know about, that sooner or later they're going to, like we want to have four kids, and we're afraid they won't date us if they know that, then that's going to be an impediment that we need to put out there right away so that we can end the relationship as quickly as possible and then find our mate. To be honest, it is a lot of work to find someone through the internet, but it's also encouraging because there are so many people using it now. And with the different systems out there, we can use filters to pick, I don't want this and I want that. And if we use them, and if we ask the questions, and if we put ourselves out there with what we're looking for and what we're like, we are much more likely to find a potential mate. But it's going to take time, and we have to be patient. I think people get in a hurry to be with someone, so they just date someone they found attractive. It's amazing to me over the years how I've met people that have actually gotten married, and I'll ask them, well, why did you marry that person? And it's usually the guy, not always, but usually the guy will say, well, she was pretty. I mean, pretty is nice, but we need a lot more than that, a lot more. So what we want to do with the internet, if we're going to use that route, is go through people as quickly as possible because there's a lot of people on it. And it should be fairly easy if we have an idea of what we're looking for and what would be a good match for us to go through the system, through the people fairly quickly until we find that right person. It's going to take us longer if we're going to really look for a good match for ourselves. It just has to. Anything that's a good fit takes longer. I mean, to find that perfect dress for that perfect dance, we have to go to a lot of stores. It's the same way with finding a mate. It takes a lot of people to get to know quickly. You don't put on a dress and wear it for 2 months and then put another dress and wear it for 2 months and then until we find the right dress. We take it off the rack, look at it, maybe try it on for a second, and we put it back. Do the same thing with the internet. If it isn't going to work out, we just say next, next, next. And I think a lot of this can be discovered before we even go on that date by asking questions, by asking them about what their goals are, what they're looking for, what their likes and dislikes are. If we find there's a lot in common, of course, let's go forward. But if there isn't, and the only thing we have in common is that we think they're attractive, that in the long run is going to go nowhere. I can pretty much guarantee that. So with the internet, it can be a very effective tool if we use it well. We're going to use it well by finding out about that person as much as we can and share with that person what we are and what we're looking for. And with that information, I think the internet can be a great way to find potential mates. Lastly, I just want to talk about trust. Trusting God, trusting the universe to help us find what we're looking for. I think so often we just think it's work and we have to put forth that effort. But I think when we get in that good place, when we really are taking care of ourselves, that's the primary focus, then the universe, God, helps us to find what we're looking for. We don't have to be alone in this. It's almost as if when we get in that right place, when we are comfortable being alone, that all of a sudden everything within the universe, everything synchronizes to help us move in the direction of finding our soulmate, finding that person that we can spend our life with. But we have to trust, and the main way we trust is by being comfortable being single, being comfortable without our friends until we find our soulmate, until we find our friends. That's the key factor, looking but being comfortable. Then I really believe that God helps us find what we're looking for. But we have to be comfortable in our own skins. We have to like our time alone as we're looking for people to journey life with. And with that perfect balance, I really believe God will help us find the mate and friendships that are best for us. So to recap, just remember there's two things in finding a good mate. First is being that good mate first, being that good friend first. And secondly, finding someone as like us as much as possible. The more that we have in common, the better we're going to do. I mean, having some things different is okay, but having a lot in common, it can be really great in the long run for happiness in a relationship. And in the next episode, we're going to look at how to keep our good partner and good friends throughout our lives. So thank you for joining me on the Happiness Podcast. If you would like to learn more about the world of happiness, please go to www.happinesspodcast.org. That's happinesspodcast.org. Until next time, accept what is, love what is.